This is the longest minute I've ever seen. There we go. Morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. This is a regular meeting of the Los Angeles Board of Police Commissioners. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Good morning. Let the record reflect. Commissioner Soboroff, Figueroa Villa, and Saltzman are present, and we have a quorum. Number one on the agenda, election of officers. This item has been continued. Number two on the agenda.
So I want to make a comment on number one.
Okay.
The charter says that the officers of the police commission, president and vice president, term is no longer than 2 years. So we will have an election of new officers for president and vice president I think it'll be on our meeting of September 15th. Okay, next.
Item number two, commission comments.
Okay.
Item number three, report of the chief of police.
Morning, Chief.
Haysinger.
Morning, Mr. President, members of the commission. Before I get into the crime reporting snapshot, I'd just like to report the fact that last week, which was the second week going into the third week of the most recent LAPD Youth Leadership Academy, there are presently nearly 600 participants in this brand new class that began at the top of August. Although it's not the largest class, it is one of the largest classes that we've had since the renaissance of the program in 2007. I'd like to draw particular attention to 77th area under the capable leadership of Captain Corey Palka. The 77th last week brought with them 50 brand new cadet recruits, and as our way of supporting their extraordinary work just in terms of community outreach, under the umbrella of the $100,000 recurring grant that we received from Max Zacchaeus and USC last year, we have rented a bus for the purposes of transporting those young people on a weekly basis to the Cadet Academy to limit the degree to which they had to struggle to find transportation needs. Again, just like to point out just the phenomenal work throughout the city of Los Angeles just in terms of recruiting these young people. As I have often said, these are the leaders not for tomorrow, but many of these young people are leaders for today. As it relates to our crime picture, our year-to-date numbers are as follows. Homicides, we're up slightly at 0.6%. Sexual assault, we're currently up 5.1%. Robbery, up 15.3%. And aggravated assault, up 25.5% year-to-date for total violent crime increase year-to-date compared to last of 19.6%. Property crime with burglary, up 8%. Motor vehicle theft, up 18.5%. Burglary and theft from vehicle, increase of 15.7%, and thefts are up nearly 5% at 4.6% for a total property crime increase of 10.7%, which brings our total part-run crime picture year-to-date comparison at 12.4%. By Bureau, Central Bureau is up 17%, South Bureau up 10.1%, Valley is up 9.3%, and West Bureau is up 14.8%. And that concludes the report of the Chief of Police.
Thank you. Now, we believe we have four comment cards. We have Mr. Herman, followed by Prentice Jenkins. And we have Hitler.
Is this the police report?
Yes, it is.
Great. Hundreds of actions left their mark in our life. In one way or another, everyone who lived was impacted by the veracity. Two-thirds of the 20th century of today, Black Lives Matter. What sort of man could plan and carry out such heinous crimes, schemes against humanity, those in our society rendered as Black Lives Matter? How dare you carry out such horrendous schemes, LAPD? How was it, meaning the conditions that you caused the harm, able to win the support of the city of Los Angeles? How? For this deadly reason, black lives do matter. Stop the killing. Stop assuming that every person in our street and society and social life is a victim of your brutality. I can't breathe. So why did not one of you in any way try to stop this until it was almost too late? It was almost too late before anyone jumped into it to stop it. What am I talking about? Black Lives Matter? No. What Adolf Hitler did during his time of reign.
Prentice Jenkins, activist since 1991, City Life newsletter. I want to know if the investigation is still going on in the Azelle Ford shooting. I'm sorry, the Azelle Ford murder. Of the two gay homosexual cops who jumped out of the car, tackled a man to the ground just because they want to fill him up. I want to know if that investigation is still going on. And if that investigation is still going on, are we proceeding towards an indictment of these two cops? People don't believe that there are gay cops in the police department, but there are. I applaud all the gay cops in the police department who are just doing their job. I don't applaud the ones who are jumping out of cars, tackling black men just so they can grab onto their penis. This man is, they shot him to death. He's dead now just because they wanted to grab his penis. That's it. Just because they had a homosexual, they got homosexually excited on this man. They messed with that man the day before and came back and threw him up on, jumped out of the car, threw him up against the wall, and tried to grab his penis again. This time he fought back, and that time they shot him. How many more black men are going to get shot that way? Some crazy psychotic cop suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder decides, that's a handsome black man. I want to see how big it is. I want to see if the stereotype's correct. So they jump out of the car like they did on Azelle Ford, tackle him to the ground, slam him up against the wall, grab on it, say, yeah, it's pretty big. He fights back, and then they shoot him in the back. Those cops are murderers. That had nothing to do with police work. It had everything to do with them engaging in their secret perversion. They're perverted cops. And I showed you videos of perverted cops molesting children, so you know you have them.
We have Hitler followed by Melvin Farmer.
Yes, I'm just doing this to make you just as comfortable as possible at these meetings. So you want to know where the Klan meeting is every week, Tuesday at 9:30 in the morning. This is the Los Angeles chapter of the Ku Klux Klan, better known as the Board of Police Commissioners. Now, people can't just drive on the streets in the city and mind their own fucking business. I'm driving a car, 5:30 fucking p.m., over by Staples Center, Olympic Boulevard, near Figueroa, and there's traffic. So I'm trying to move through the traffic, and all of a sudden I got to get to FedEx at 6 p.m., and I hear, roo, roo, and you know what that sound is? The Los Angeles Klan. The Klan are pulling me over. And I didn't have my hood. It's been a long fucking time since my family has wore the hood. But we got to wear a hood, and I'm sorry. And the cop says, if you had your hood on, I would have given you a warning ticket. So I said, hey. I said, what the fuck are you pulling me over for? Seatbelt ticket. A fucking seatbelt ticket. Pension, training? $500,000 spent of taxpayer dollars to do what? To train a cop to write this fucking thing? And then they report this to the DMV. And for the next 3 years, your insurance goes up 24 fucking percent, even if it's a minor point violation for your fucking ticket. Is this the city you want? You want us all to drive around in our cars wearing these hoods? Okay. That's what you want? 17-foot walls, machine gun guards at your fucking rich estate, you 1% fuckers? Is that what you want? Or do you want to lay off people, fight crime, investigate it, stop killing innocent people dead in the fucking streets?
Next.
Melvin Farmers.
Is this the last speaker?
Yes, on this item.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. Melvin Farmer, civil rights activist, consultant. I like to play on an even playing field. I've heard them talk about police killings, black lives, Ezell Ford, I know them all. But I ain't heard nobody say nothing about black-on-black crime. So we going to get to the point. We got a problem here. I heard you 100 days. Let me give you my resume. I'm a founding member of the Crips. I'm 58. I've been in it since I was 13. I know murder. I did 30 years in the prison system, juvenile, adult, LAPD. I know that system. Blacks are not only getting killed by police because you're talking about me, because I can't escape my community. I stay on 83rd and Western. I'm from A-Trey Gangster. So when you say you're a Klan, that ain't no Klans. Blacks kill themselves. So we all in the same game. But let's address that 100 days. That did not exist. That was the media. You'd look on the internet, this being abused by gangs because they're gangbanging. But now let's get to violence when it comes to police and violence on the streets. In the Ezell case for it, I did Margaret Laverne Mitchell. I did Taisha Miller. I also brought public awareness with the Tevin Price murder, which was the red shoes. That was me standing next to her. But I didn't go on the public because the media and everybody stole it. So the next 2 days, I brought you
You can speak again during public comment. So put another card in, okay? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We're now on item number 4, consent agenda items. These items are considered to be routine and non-controversial, upon which the board is provided with adequate information for approval without inquiry or discussion. We do have two comment cards on 4A. Would a commissioner wish to pull an item as special for discussion, 4B through 4H?
I move approval of items 4B through 4H.
You have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, 4A.
4A, department's report dated August 20th, 2015, relative to a monetary donation in the amount of $69,638.35 from the Los Angeles Police Foundation to support overtime uniforms and office supplies for the officers and students from Operation Central Bureau Juveniles Impact Program. And we have Mr. Herman and Hitler.
And the time to submit cards for 4A is over. Go ahead, Herman, get up there.
We're looking at $1.1 million spent. Harry Pergerson, Ninth Circuit versus Feuer and Sobel. Now on to topic. We're talking about a small amount of money here of $69,000. Sobra. I could actually count. I learned to count when I went to school, Ms. Sobra. That's why I got my doctorate degree here. All I can be. All I can be, Mr. Sobra. And I do think, Mr. Sobrov, the police department deserves support for the overtime, not to wear uniforms, but to share their love to the community. Peace and not war. Warriors and not war. But it seems you don't understand, sir. You don't understand, sir. Strictly because of the business of uniforms and office supplies. That's no give or take. They have to have the supplies, my friend. But the love you cannot give. You could only train by example, sir. By example. Do you hear me, Sobroff, on your cell phone there? Are you calling mommy because I'm right? Because I hell know when I'm right, Mr. Sobroff. And I deserve to be heard. With your full attention, look at me when I speak to you. Look at me when I speak to you. Look at me when I speak to you. But don't close the meetings down. Because our chanting is going to continue. So provide the officers what? It's what they need. Their tools. Thank you, Mr. Silberoff.
Okay, the next speaker is Hitler, and I believe he is out of the room.
Next,
we are now on number 5, regular agenda items.
Oh, need a vote on
motion
that item.
For approval of 4A.
Sorry? Approval of 4A.
Do we have a second?
Second. Sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Okay.
Item 5.
Okay, now we're on item number 5, regular agenda items. Item 5A is a verbal presentation. We do have cards for 5A and 5C. For the commissioner.
Move approval for item 5B.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, let's do 5A.
5A, Department's verbal report and discussion relative to the status of the implementation of the body-worn video program and policies related to the use of and access to video imagery.
Okay, the time to submit speaker cards on item 5A is closed. Morning.
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 Good morning.
Dan. Maggie. Arif.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I'll start with a quick update on where we are with the implementation itself. Over the past few months, we've been working on all of the network and infrastructure work in order to deploy the first 860 cameras that were donated through the Police Foundation. I'm happy to report that all of the network and infrastructure work is complete and ready to go, and we will be prepared to begin training and deployment of the cameras at Mission Division next Monday, August 31st. The plan is to then roll out to the other two divisions, basically in two-week increments, so we can be prepared to deploy to Newton on September 14th, and then to Central Traffic and the specialized divisions there that will be receiving cameras on September 28th.
Will that total the 867?
Yes.
Those three? Okay.
Yes. That will complete the rollout of the 860. Couple other updates in that regard as well. As you know, we had some grant funding that was awarded by the National Institute of Justice to work with some researchers and universities to evaluate the impact of the body-worn program, both from the department officer perspective, but also the community perspective. And the first award was for $1 million for the first year. We've actually been invited by NIJ to apply for the next round of funding, which would be an additional $1 million, bringing that to $2 million total for that study. So we've submitted that application as well for the continuation of that grant. We also submitted the grant application for the Bureau of Justice Assistance funding that would allow us to procure additional funding, additional cameras with that funding. There was a cap on how much we could apply for that, but that should equate to the purchase of about additional 700 cameras. We should have word back on that grant application most likely by the end of September.
And how about the first half of the 7,000 cameras? Am I wrong that the budget approved the first half?
That's correct. There's $4.5 million in the unappropriated balance in the budget for this fiscal year. We're still working with the city attorney through the procurement process for that. And when that's complete, we will go to city council and request that the money be transferred from the unappropriated balance into the department budget so that we can execute that agreement.
Great.
Do you have a sense of timing on that last piece?
On that last piece, we're hoping that all of that will be complete by the probably middle of November or so, so that we can continue on with the deployment to the additional divisions by the end of November.
Good.
And then we'll do that as quickly as we possibly can to get through the deployment of the additional 7,000.
Dan, you're the most photographed on-body camera person in the world, so they never show your face, but they always say your name.
That's the best part, sir.
Comments on the rollout training?
No, we've received a lot of cooperation from the divisions, so we've been speaking with them, make sure that they're prepared and the training coordinators are prepared. So the cooperation has been good from the staff members. There's the devil's in the details, so we're really working through all the different issues, making sure that we can get this out as smoothly as possible.
Okay. Arif, anything you'd like to add?
Good morning, Commissioner Arif Ali Khan, Director of Policy and Constitutional Policing. As you know, the Commission approved the Special Order 12 back in April that set forth the parameters for the usage of and deployment of the body cameras and some of the key issues regarding its use. We've received quite a bit of comments of that, many of them very positive, especially inquiries from other law enforcement agencies throughout the country. Since that time, we've been working on the procedural aspects of implementing it, giving direction to both officers and supervisors on how the training should be, and using a lot of the things that we had done back when the digital in-car video was implemented and issuing orders to provide guidance on transition periods, for example, of enabling officers to have a sufficient amount of time to actually learn, mandating that they'd be trained, mandating that they be essentially certified before being deployed, and then indicating that during, you know, a reasonable period of time, about 90 days, that would be an opportunity for them to acclimate and learn how to use the equipment and ways for supervisors to encourage that would happen. We've also come up with procedures that deal with how audits would be conducted and ensuring that they're done in a way that's consistent with generally accepted government accounting standards, inspections, reviews, also indicating that we will be monitoring who is accessing in the department videos to make sure there's not unauthorized access and viewing of videos. We've also looked at training and how video would be used in training and set up a procedure for requests to be made, making sure that we're not using for training videos that would be subject to that are part of litigation or some sort of disciplinary action, and then what the restrictions would be on who would be able to see it, etc. So setting up the processes and procedures necessary to actually execute and implement the program by the officers who will be getting them next week, and currently have them getting them next week and are getting the 7,000 over the next year and a half. I know there were some questions before that we discussed, but I'm happy to take
them. Tell me, are you monitoring the federal government and the states, all kinds of bills and prospective legislation about, you know, should there be a national policy, should there be a state policy, should there only be local policies?
Yes, very much so. Of course, prior to development of the policy that was proposed to the Police Commission, we had a lot of consultation with other departments, with the community, with experts, Department of Justice, et cetera. Since that time, we were constantly monitoring that. In fact, I've been up to Sacramento and testified both prior to the adoption of Special Order 12 and then after to talk about some of the bills that have been up there. We've had conversations with numerous staff and the legislature about their concerns and explaining what our policies and procedures are. And I know we've been in contact with folks in Washington as well. And we'll continue to do that to explain what we're doing and also learn if there's some other aspects that we should address or potentially change.
Okay. Questions?
Just a quick question. When you talk about training supervisors, who are those supervisors and who will be directly responsible for training our line police officers?
So we have a training cadre that we put together that is led by Sergeant Gomez, his staff. They also include all of the training coordinators at the divisions and the bureaus. So all the training coordinators are learning the training process as well and will participate with us. In terms of supervisors, that will be all of the supervisors essentially in the division as we...
The sergeants who supervise the cars... or who have direct contact with those guys? Who is it?
Everybody from the captain and below will participate in the training.
Commissioner Saltzman?
Yes, I do have a few questions. One for Mr. Alacon. If I'm not mistaken, there are items related to lists that were, perhaps are still are, in the meet and confer process. I was wondering if you're able to talk about any of that, the status of that.
All the items I just mentioned were in the meet and confer process. We work very collaboratively with the union, so the orders related to how we would use it for training purposes, the orders regarding the transition period, and how supervisors should handle both the training and if there are minor issues that come up from it, how we would use the video in terms of auditing and the discovery of misconduct. All of those things have been concluded as of yesterday.
So is there anything outstanding with that meet and confer that relates to the on-body cameras?
Not at this point. There is one particular issue that we're continuing to discuss regarding the use of video for research and just more of an informational issue about informing folks of how, when we bring in outside researchers to evaluate, for example, the NIJ grant, just what that process is, what that procedure is, the restrictions we place on the researchers, those types of things. It's not necessarily part of a meet and confer process, but it's part of a continuing dialogue with the Police Protective League on how that has been.
The issue of officers viewing video from other officers or stationary, that's been resolved?
Yes. The decision was made, of course, in Special Order 12, adopted by the Commission, the discretion is left with this FID supervisor at the scene on whether, based on whether it's necessary and appropriate to show a video of another officer to one of the involved officers. Decision was made in collaboration with the Police Protective League that concept could be incorporated into the training as we do with other investigative decisions that are made, and that as long as it stayed consistent with the objectives of the program, which are identified in the special order, that should be sufficient. It enables us to not have a bright line rule, and as we do with many investigations, give that opportunity to the investigator in those circumstances to make that decision. Now, of course, those decisions are under tremendous scrutiny, not only by the department and its internal processes, by the Inspector General, by the Commission, and so we think from that we should be able to have a reasonable balance.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and it leads to me to my next question. When we've discussed these policies in the past, and I've asked questions about, in particular, the public release of the video and whether the officer views the video prior to making a statement. Both you and the chief have said that let me back up. And specifically what I was asking about was the criteria that would be used in making the exceptions to those policies. And I ask that because I think we ought to know what they are, and also so that both the department and the inspector general can actually audit, if you will, how it's working. And I don't quite understand how that happens if we don't know what the criteria are. In response, you and the chief have said that the question I'm asking would be answered in other policies, that the special order that was adopted is a user policy relating to the use of the cameras by the officers, but that those other questions about the criteria with respect to exceptions for public release and for prior review would be in other policies. So I'd like to know where we are on the other policies.
So I think I need to understand, because I think your question conflates a number of issues and representations that you believe were made by either the chief or me. With respect to public release of video, we've been very clear and consistent that the video, being that it is the purpose of it and the requirement is to record only investigative and enforcement contacts with members of the public, which constitutes an investigative record, as we have treated all 1.3 million plus digital in-car video recordings over the last 5 years, as we treat 911 calls and other investigative material, is not subject to disclosure on the Public Records Act and, generally speaking, is not disclosed. Could there be an exception? That's up to the discretion of the chief of police, and there may be circumstances where he believes, especially in the interest of public safety, that something should be disclosed. But as a general matter, and as the pattern practice, and what I've said, I think, numerous times now, what the chief has said publicly, is that disclosure to the public is not the practice of the LAPD to waive that exemption for investigative records. And I've talked about before, and I'm happy to do it again, why the rationale for that and the justification for that. With respect
Before we move on, let's talk about that. So to prepare for today, I went back and looked at the transcript of the April discussion, and I just want to understand and make sure I see how what you're saying today makes sense with what we heard previously. In April, at our meeting, you said the following. I'm reading from the transcript. With respect to whether digital evidence will be disclosed to the public, there is no specific policy regarding that because our policy is to abide by the law and produce what's required and what we're obligated to, whether it's under the Public Records Act, whether it's by court order, or any discovery obligations that we may have. And I guess if that was a misstatement, I'd be happy to hear. I certainly misstate all the time. But
before you talk about whether it's a misstatement, what do you consider?
No, I don't think it was, but okay. I don't want to. I know that speaking publicly, I sometimes say things I didn't mean, and reading it back to you, I just want if you felt differently. I guess my question is how then you respond to the recommendations in the PERF report that was used for the development of these policies, that the policy be made public at the time that the cameras are being instituted.
So let me back up just with respect to the question you asked. My statement about that there isn't a policy, it is true there is no written policy, and I think that's what the context was of doing that. There is no written policy. There is no written policy today about that. Just as there is no written policy that the department will comply with a court order to produce documents for discovery purposes, or that we are required under the law to produce information as part of a criminal prosecution. The statement I made, which I stand by and has been consistent by me and the chief of police, and I stand by today, is that the practice is that as with any police department, we comply with the law. We are not required to produce investigative records. We have not produced investigative records in the past, with limited exceptions, and never on digital in-car video or other types of video that I'm aware of, and we don't anticipate changing that. So that is the decision that's been made, and that's, of course, subject to change and discretion of the chief of police.
You do acknowledge that these are reviewed on a case-by-case basis, and there may be exceptions to that policy at the discretion of the chief of police.
Any Public Records Act is considered for it on the merits and the circumstances and is evaluated independently. But as a general matter, we do not release it for the reasons that we've talked about before.
So back to where I started.
Every Public Records Act is evaluated independently because, of course, there are many Public Records Acts requests where we are required to produce it. So we're going to evaluate each one independently to make sure we're producing what we're obligated to under the statute and the law and not produce those that we are not required to unless there were some compelling reason why it would be necessary, and in those circumstances would require internal discussion and sometimes ultimately the decision of the chief of police.
And those exceptional circumstances, we evaluate that based on what criteria?
Well, on It depends. So, for example, in other investigative records, the timing, perhaps the investigative record, the situation, the case had been closed for some time. Maybe it's something that's being done for research purposes. Maybe there are ways to anonymize the information that may be contained in the record. I mean, there are a variety of circumstances that are difficult to say for a blanket statement that we would do so in all situations or no situation. That's the law is designed to enable a department to make those determinations on a case-by-case basis. But let me just reiterate, as a general matter, when it comes to video, we do not disclose investigative records involved with either digital in-car video, on-body camera video, surveillance video, other types of video that is part of an investigative record.
And if you don't disclose it, are there policies about when the department or the chief will actually comment on what's in the video?
I'm not aware of any written policy about when they would comment on a video.
And
just as I'm not sure there are any policies on when the police chief would comment on a criminal investigation or criminal prosecution or any of the millions of things that the police agency does in the regular course of its business.
Well, let me just give you some examples, which is why I'm... You can help me because this is why I'm confused. Over the last year, there were three instances where the chief or the department made comments on video, wasn't departmental video, but other video, or the facts in the criminal investigation. One was in the shooting of Brandon Glenn in Venice, where the chief of police reviewed video and said he did not see anything that would warrant the use of force. So... about by the officer commenting on that evidence. Another was the Skid Row shooting, Charlie, I'm not sure how to say his last name, Kayunang. I'm sorry?
Charlie Africa.
The chief comments on the evidence. There's video. The chief commented on the evidence from the video that the chief suspected the suspect was going for the officer's weapon. And in the Los Feliz shooting, Walter Williams de Leon, department commented on the officer's conduct after the shooting, which was rolling the victim over and handcuffing the victim. And the department said that was standard operating procedure. So I'm trying to understand then, do you not see any inconsistency between the department commenting in situations like that on what's clearly a criminal investigation and not commenting on video it has or not releasing the video it has?
Well, first, I think you're asking a question that's well beyond whether when we disclose video pursuant to the Public Records Act and the chief's comments on an investigation or what an officer said or what the investigation said. It is a common practice throughout the United States for chiefs and others to potentially comment on an ongoing investigation. That is very different than saying that we should disclose video evidence, DNA reports, fingerprint evidence, witness statements as a document or a record to the public. So with respect to what we would disclose in terms of a record and a public records request, as I've indicated before, we do not disclose video. Whether the chief and whether it's appropriate that he comment on an investigation is a completely different question, one for which I am not prepared to discuss, especially since it wasn't part of the agenda, and is really a general question about police practices, about communicating to the public about investigations that are ongoing, especially if it's about video that was released to the public and is not something that's being kept confidential. So, unfortunately, I don't think I can address your other concerns that you're expressing, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, this is a question that I've asked repeatedly, and the answer that I've received from you and the chief is that that would not be in this user policy, but that the answers would be in the other policies, and which is why I asked in the beginning where we are on the other policies.
Okay, but I'd have to take issue with that. I don't believe I've ever said that we would have a policy on when the chief of police could comment on an investigation. That is not a policy that's related to when we would disclose video evidence complaints as part of any access request.
There is
so
a policy.
Let me finish, Commissioner. If the commission has a concern about when the chief of police makes a comment about an investigation, especially a criminal one, I think that needs to be addressed either in a different form and or different circumstances, because I don't see how it's related to what's on the agenda today, which are the questions regarding public access and disclosure of investigative records, in this case, body-worn
video. Well, let me give you my opinion why it is related. There are two particular aspects of this policy that are of concern to me. One is about the public release or non-public release of the video. The other is saying that the officer shall review the video prior to making a statement. And the combination of those two policies, to me, is quite problematic. And while at least the one regarding the officer's view I think of as a perhaps a close call, when you put those two together, that the department will not release the information that it has, it will comment on information as it sees fit, and the officer is required to view the video before making a statement. For me, that undermines the significant effort going on here, which is to increase transparency and increase trust. And that's why I think they're related. And I'm sorry if you don't see that. I would like to talk a little bit about the other policy, for when the officers shall view the video prior to the statement. And it's really the same question. In the prior discussion, we were told that there are exceptions to that policy, and you, in fact, this morning referred to the individual evaluation by the FID officer. And so my question is the same. What are the criteria that are being used to make those decisions? How would the Inspector General review those, or how would the Audit Division review those if they were going to do that, if there are no criteria from which to judge the decision?
So once again, I need to understand what you're asking. Are you asking about what is in Special Order 12 and was in Special Order 45 regarding digital in-car of allowing the officer to view his or her own video or the video of other officers?
His or her own video?
That has been established policy on the digital in-car and body-worn video. The criteria for that are what was set forth by the commission, which identifies that they are, as part of an FID investigation, allowed to view the video prior to being interviewed by FID as part of an administrative investigation. As I have said before, and you had the same question, and I'll provide you the same answer, in a criminal investigation, it would be handled differently. And in a criminal investigation of an officer, it is likely that it would not be shown. But also in a criminal investigation officer, the officer has a Fifth Amendment right not to be interviewed. And also, in a criminal investigation of the officer, the prosecutor, et cetera, would not have access to a compelled statement that would be taken in the administrative investigation. So that is, I'm not sure what you say by the criteria in which they would not be shown a video in an FID investigation. As I've stated and what I recall the chief saying, it is within the policy as set forth in the policy. There is no discretion when it comes to that. If it's being handled by FID as a criminal investigation, of course an entirely different approach is taken that has to comply with the Constitution and all the other laws. This is about an administrative investigation conducted by FID on the use of deadly force or their categorical use of force. So when it comes to their own video, they will be allowed to see their own video, as they have been ever since the implementation of digital in-car video.
Let me read again from the April transcript. I'm reading your statement. The presumption is that they will be able to view their own video, but there would be the discretion, as the chief and Chief Villegas said, that if the circumstances are unique, that they can be prohibited from viewing the video. So,
and I believe, and I don't have the transcript in front of me, and I don't know, but I also believe that one of those unique circumstance we talked about was a criminal investigation. In fact, I do recall talking and having a discussion with you in the session about how in a criminal investigation, those are compelled statements. In an administrative investigation, they're compelled statements that cannot even be used for consideration in the criminal investigation under a series of cases, Supreme Court cases in California and the United States. So, I'll just leave it at that.
So, if we're talking about an FID investigation of a use of force, are there exceptions to when the officer shall view the video from the officer's own camera?
If it is a criminal investigation.
Against the officer?
Against the officer. Which often I should may not even involve an interview of the officer because he or she has a Fifth Amendment right, a privilege against self-incrimination.
I don't have further questions. I do have one more to the Inspector General, which is in our last hearing, you assured us that you would be reviewing the use of the cameras both on an ongoing basis and that you would report back no later than 6 months with a general report. And I'd just like to make sure that we're still on track for those reviews.
We're still on track.
Right?
Good.
And second...
6 months from September 1st, right? That's when our implementation date is, right?
And in addition, I think the same time frame, I think the department should return to us, identifying the successes, any problems, issues that have come up regarding the implementation and the use of the cameras. I think it's important that we have that information relatively quickly. I understand after 6 months there may not be an extraordinary amount of data, but I do think it's important the department come back with that report as well. If we were going to make a motion on this today, I would ask that be included, but we don't have any action on it.
I think we've been clear on that.
So, okay.
Yeah, of course the department has no, and we anticipate wanting to come back and talk about either the success or the challenges about this, and we plan, as I've mentioned before, we understand this is an iterative process. This is the most ambitious body-worn video program in the nation.
Right.
Even the deployment next week in one division is larger than most of the programs that have already existed. And we expect to adjust and change these things. And fortunately, we've had a very collaborative relationship with the Police Protective League that represents all the officers who will be using this. And they also understand that there may need to be adjustments to make sure this program is effective. That's why we're securing grants. We have $1 million from NIJ to conduct a methodologically sound project, and I anticipate, as we should, we will make adjustments to the policy as necessary.
We've had all kinds of theoretical discussions, all kinds of discussions under different circumstances. What we don't have is the practical knowledge, and that's what we're going to get, and we will revisit that in 6 months, and I would assume that there will be things that work out much better than what our expectations are, and there will be things that don't meet our expectations, and I fully think that if adjustments need to be made, that those adjustments will be made. But that should be done on practical experience in the circumstances, the unique circumstances of the city of Los Angeles.
I do have one additional request for both the Inspector General and the Department. As you're reviewing the policies, I would find it helpful if you would review the materials that we received yesterday from the ACLU. They're quite voluminous. This is a printed copy. It's quite a bit of information about the specific policies we're talking about. And I would find it helpful to have comments from both the Inspector General and the Department about their responses to those as you get into the implementation yourselves. As you know, Commissioner Kim and I had hoped to have a public hearing along those lines. That didn't happen, and no need to beat a dead horse. But I would find it helpful if you would take seriously the information provided here and help us understand, to the extent that information disagrees with the department policy, why the department believes the policy it's following is better than what was recommended.
If I could just mention, as I think we've stated before, we've had extensive meetings with the ACLU and others about their concerns. They submitted a letter to the commission before, which we, of course, read and I think addressed some of their concerns. We answered questions regarding some of those concerns. I received the letter yesterday. It cites various research, and I can say that I personally have done some investigation of much of that research regarding memory and recollection and stress. I have meetings actually set up with experts from, fortunately some of them are locally, about some of those studies, and we will constantly be viewing this to determine whether what we have is the right way to go, because the objective here is to make sure that we have a complete picture. We understand what the totality of the circumstances are. We understand why actions were taken, because ultimately that's the decision of whether it was reasonable that the commission has to make. So I just want to mention that we've already been in this process.
I appreciate that.
I've personally previously asked to have continue the conversations with the ACLU, and we will talk to everybody, especially academic researchers who have very good evidence. Dan Simon, who I know is one of your former colleagues, who's written a book, In Doubt, who's highly critical of the criminal justice system and some of the techniques, who also came out yesterday with an editorial that lays out about why it makes sense for officers to view for a complete, richer picture. We plan to have meetings with him and do a full examination of what available research and data there is to see if what we're doing is effective.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think it'd be very helpful for us to hear about that.
Any closing comments, Dan, Maggie, Commissioner?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we do have seven common cards.
Yeah, oh, wait. Go ahead. Columbo, we were talking about Columbo today.
Yeah.
One more.
I just want to, I've raised a lot of questions about these policies, and I don't want to leave the impression that I don't think the cameras are a good idea. I think the cameras are a great idea. I think they're extremely important, and I think both the department and particularly the president of the commission deserve tremendous praise for the amount of work they put in to bring this about. And Ms. Goodrich talked about the implementation beginning at the end of this month in a very quiet way. And in fact, I think it's a very significant thing. And I understand neither of you want to be tooting your own horn, so to speak. But this is a big deal. And I want to thank you for the progress you've made. We may disagree some on the policies, right, but the implementation is extraordinarily important. And I thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's. We have comments on eight.
Yes, sir. We have seven.
Okay.
The first four, Peter Bybring, Jamie Garcia, Hamid Khan, and Ted Hayes.
Morning, Peter. Thanks for the letter yesterday. Haven't finished it.
Welcome. Yeah.
A little thick.
So Peter Bybring from the ACLU of Southern California. I agree with many of Commissioner Saltzman's comments, including that this is a big deal, and that body cameras are a promising technology for transparency and hopefully for restoring public trust, and one that promises a real sea change in, I think, discipline and relationships with between the department and the public. But that is why it's so important to get these policies right, because body cameras are just a tool. And depending on how they are used, they could promote transparency and public trust or undercut it. Our positions are pretty clear where we've been on record. The voluminous submission we made yesterday outlines some of the research on memory and the ways that officer review can permanently taint an officer's memory and confuse an officer as to what he or she remembered from percipient experience as opposed to from viewing, particularly after repeated viewing and particularly after stressful situations. We point to other departments like San Jose and Oakland, which has had body cameras for far longer than any other California department, which do not allow officer review and have not allowed officer review in critical incidents. This submission is really designed to give this commission an opportunity to do its job, to not just hear from the department the department's own explanation of why it came up with the policies it did, but to dig into the facts and to dig into both sides of these controversial and very important points in order to exercise real oversight and an attempt to determine whether this policy is in fact the best. And we would urge the department now and at least at the 6 months review to really hear from experts and the community that may have opposing views on these policy provisions.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
My name is Jamie Garcia. I'm with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. So before I get into my statement, I had an interesting conversation with my mom this morning, different views on policing, but she said, why do we need body cameras? Shouldn't officers just be honest? So, you know, in thinking about the amount of money that we're spending and the fact that this commission failed to even investigate that the digital in-car video systems were sabotaged in communities of color, and that seemed to not be an issue, and now the Department of Justice is having to take up that issue, which is really shameful. So on January 14th, the commission held two community meetings on the use of body cameras by LAPD. And there was talk by Steve Soboroff that, you know, everybody wanted these body cameras, including Councilmember Englander, the Los Angeles Protective Police Protective League, the ACLU, and was very surprised how everyone supported this. But the reality was much different than what President Soboroff said. And when the community did have a chance to see, when he did have a chance to seek community feedback, the question to the community in attendance was not whether people in Los Angeles agree or disagree on the use of body cameras by LAPD. Instead, what became very apparent was the use of body cameras was a foregone conclusion. So this commission already decided, and there was very organized community members there who actually have worked with families who have lost loved ones by police violence, and that was not the top of the list of what they wanted or what they needed. So majority of the testimonies by community members questioned and rejected the use of body cameras. The Stop LAPD Spying Coalition members presented a four-page report citing communities and academic research and law enforcement incidents showing the futility of body cameras. Body camera footage has not and will not end the impunity of law enforcement, the manipulation of video, and the ability of officers to turn cameras on and off. Digital evidence lies outside community control. Little existing trust with the LAPD to not tamper with these body cameras. Body cameras will only increase surveillance of community members. Body cameras only capture police line of view. And I think President Selzman also said we have the last question of where is this information going to go.
I'm going to eliminate the people behind you if you don't stop speaking.
I know, but my last point was...
You got a choice. Do you want the other people to speak, or are you going to hog it? You watch me.
So where is all this data going to go? That's what I want to know, and that's the fact about surveillance, is where is this data going to go?
Next.
Man, Soboroff, you're really pathetic by the day. My name is Hamid Khan with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I'm just reminded back in 2008 with the great fanfare that Viragosa and Bratton launched the in-car digital car video cameras. And by 2011, 2012, 92 out of those 300 patrol cars were sabotaged and the antennas were intentionally broken. You have a constitutional representative, and I think it's more of a rather grand deception. I mean, this should be called the deception games, because when you cut through the lingo, when you cut through the language, what we are seeing is exactly the repeat. I mean, some of us, if we were not here, then of course, like, you know, just we, one can say that it's all rhetorical. But having been an eyewitness and having been there when the in-car video cameras were launched, I mean, with, you know, a lot of hoopla that the Christopher Commission had come out with the report and wanted to do that. So in essence, you know, we're just seeing history repeat itself. The same thing happening. But where the communities are speaking out, when the communities, I mean, the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition has given you a 45-page report, a thoroughly investigative report from the bottom up. It does include academics. It includes the cops as well. It even has conversation with Chris Burbank, who is the chief of the police of Salt Lake City. And I'm just directly quoting from what he said, that body cameras don't prevent police misconduct or use of force. They are just an avenue to document officers' encounter with citizens and in most cases capture the good work of police officers. So in essence, you know, this deception is continuing on. I mean, and we'll be here 3 years from now. We'll be here for 4 years from now. But what's going to happen is that and more people are going to be killed by this murderous organization. More people are going to be injured. More people are going to be harassed. More manipulation is going to happen. And this whole facade and the silver bullet, you know, narrative is going to continue. But thank you for the deception, and thank you for just this very, you know, almost like a sad and a disappointing and a pathetic exchange that we just saw.
Next. Mr. Hayes?
Well, the cost of deployment is going to go down because the feds are behind this, and I'm sure you are accepting the money they're going to provide. But the real issue is deployment. How does, I mean, not deployment, but activation. Now, there's some things the department does not do well in-house, and one of those things is make motion pictures. The videos I've seen showed the top of a suspect's head who had been chased through a park and taken down. Well, we see on TV after the end of the auto chase, the takedown is on concrete or asphalt. And the top of the suspect's head is not seen. The entire body is seen. It's a video shot from a helicopter. But what we were provided at the sessions that the commission had was the top of a suspect's head. Now, I suggested that the activation be done by the drawing of a gun from a holster. That can be done by Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, whatever. It can be done. And since it's substantial amounts of money to deploy these cameras and retrofit the holsters and everything else, it can be done. Also, believe it or not, wherever that weapon is pointed, the camera can be pointed in that direction also. That's the most significant important thing, is what happens when the weapon is drawn and if it's fired. Those things are possible, they're realizable, they're doable, and that's what we should be looking at. That's the most important aspect, life and death situations. So, make another movie. Give us a better example of what these cameras might show if we were going to spend all this money buying them. The top of a person's head, whether it's parted, well oiled or not, is not important.
Thank you, sir.
And the final three speakers on this item, Michael Williams, Jaretta Sandoz, and Jamie McBride.
Morning.
You're being disrespectful already, so I have nothing to say to you. The body camera issue is something that, from what I'm hearing, is just going to be another way to allow police officers to be protected by their own. If these videos will not be shown to the public, how do we know what happened, who did what? That's what the point of body cameras is. It's supposed to be transparency between the public and the police. Also, if the officers can review the camera footage, how do we know they're not going to change their story? How do we know that they're not going to be able to say something different than what really happened? All these policies that I've heard are another way for police to just basically protect their own. You said the police protectively is, you're partnering with them to implement these things, and the president of the police protective league is a biased racist who called Ezell Ford a gang member with no proof, no evidence that he was. So how can we depend on these people, these organizations, to reprimand the police if they do violate policy or anything like that? Yeah, you're brushing off your shirt, you're looking down, Sandra's still not looking at me. I see the same disrespect that I saw when I came here the last time. You guys haven't changed. This commission is a joke. If you're not here to listen to the community and hear what the people have to say and listen and take it in, this is your job. If I was sitting where you were sitting, I would be happy to have these people from from the community telling me how I can do my job better. You guys are again being very disrespectful. I thank all the others who have been respectful and have been listening and I have been trying to. But if your president is being disrespectful,
next.
That's crazy.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Jaretta Sandoz. I'm Vice President of Los Angeles Police Protector League. I do want to start off by saying Craig Lally, the President of the LAPPO, is an honest, honorable man, and he has no, you know, that's their opinion, but he's an honorable man that has no bias or racial connotation at all. We worked numerous months with Mr. Alicon, with Ms. Goodrich, to adopt a fair policy. We stand by the policy as it is now. We didn't take this lightly. We didn't go in there and try to just make up something. We listened to the ACLU. We listened to the community. We went to numerous community meetings to see what the community has to say about the body cam. This is a good thing. Okay, this will hold the officers accountable, and it will also hold the community accountable. It will assist in prosecutions, it'll assist in, and as far as transparency, it is transparent because a video is a video. You can't erase the video. What is on the video, if there's anything that's questionable, it will be investigated because it cannot be erased. So, you know, and they asked not to be disrespectful. I listened to them and I appreciate if you listen to me while I'm talking. I represent 10,000 police officers. I want to ensure that this policy is fair. And that's why we spent months and months adopting this policy. We didn't sit in the room for hundreds and hundreds of hours to just make up something just to put it out there. Really. So I asked the police commission to look at this and to adopt the policy as it is now. And I'm sure the citizens of Los Angeles, as well as the police officers, will see that this is a fair policy as it stands right now. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Next.
Jamie McBride, and I failed to call Mr. Prentice Jenkins also.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning, sir.
My name is Jamie McBride. I'm one of the directors for the Los Angeles Police Protective League. I'm here to talk to Commissioner Saltzman about his questions about reviewing the footage of the body-worn cameras. I can talk to you from experience. I've been involved in a few shootings, which Chief Paysinger has been present at some of these shootings. I've also been wounded in one of my shootings. I can tell you from my experience, being involved in something that's that critical, your brain works in different ways. I didn't hear in some of the shootings, I didn't hear the actual gunshots being fired. Things seemed to slow down. Things seemed to go in fractions of a second, and then speed up. Your brain works very weird when you're in a critical situation, when your life depends on your actions at that time. Sometimes days later, after things have calmed down, I remember more things than I did the night the incident happened. What I hate to see is to have me be interviewed and say the suspect turns to the right when actually you watch the video and turn to the left. It's very important that we get it right, and we get it right the first time. All we need is to make one innocent error and say somebody turned this way when he turned left, and then they blow it out of proportion, and we have another Ferguson. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Wow. Wow. Craig Lally is honest, huh? Wow.
Wow.
The Christopher Commission called him one of the 40th worst cops in the LAPD. They have 9,000 cops. He's the 40th worst. This woman said he's honest. Yeah. Hitler was honest, too. This is how cameras should be used. This is a black man being searched by a cop. The cop grabs his penis, holds on to it. He holds on to it 4 seconds.
I want to show the audience. Why don't you do it outside?
No, we'll do it here. The audience is here.
You're addressing
four
the commission.
4 seconds he holds on. Now watch what he does here. He's grabbing him now because he knows what the cop is now. He knows the cop is gay, so he grabs him now.
Oh.
Now he's grabbing him. Let's hear some. See? They jump on him now. Right here, watch this. Grab one, two, three, four. He holds on to his penis for 4 seconds. Who holds on to a man's penis for 4 seconds and saying that he's searching him? He pats it, then holds on to it. That is a gay cop.
That's what happened to Ezell Ford. And they shot him to death. This is what happened to Ezell Ford. You see what that cop did? And now they know what he did. Ezell Ford fought back after that. And they threw him down on the ground and shot him in the back. This is happening all over the country. You got a lot of gay cops on the down low grabbing black men's penises and going back to the station and saying, you won't believe how big it was, and laughing.
Okay.
That is the final card on this item.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, I move that we approve.
No action needed on this item. It was informational only.
Okay. Let's go to...
For 5C, pulled by comment card, department report, dated August 12, 2015, relative to the inmate welfare fund audit, AD number 14-58. We have one comment card, Mr. Jenkins.
Okay. Mr. Jenkins is back. No questions from the commission. Welcome, guys.
All right.
Good morning.
No presentation necessary, just one public comment.
Oh.
And no questions from the commission so far.
We say we're going to use body cameras. Prentice Jenkins, City Life newsletter, activist since 1991. We say we're going to use body cameras. But the cop says we're going to use them, but we're not going to show the public.
Mr. Jenkins, if I may, this is on item C, the inmate welfare fund audit.
Welfare fund.
Yes, sir. Just keep on point, sir.
So go ahead. You want to start over on the? If you're going to be on topic, you can start over.
First of all, what the hell is an inmate welfare fund? Has anyone ever heard of an inmate welfare fund? What does it do? I mean, do inmates get money? Are you giving inmates money in the county jail? What does the inmate welfare fund do? Is it designed to generate revenue for the Los Angeles Police Department? I'd like to know what it does. Can anyone on the council send me a letter telling me what the inmate welfare fund does? I'll guarantee you none of those inmates in the county jail are talking about the inmate fund, because those inmates are not privy to the inmate welfare fund. It's inmate welfare and fund. But the inmates ain't getting the money. Who's getting the money? If there's money involved, who's getting the money? And how much money are they getting? I just saw the sheriff department made $70 million on pay phones in the jails. How do you make $70 million putting quarters in pay phones? I mean, where's this money coming from? And police department taking this money from? Are they taking people's property when they arrest them? Is that what they're doing? Someone on the council needs to give me an answer as to what the hell an inmate welfare fund is.
Okay. Will you pass this to him? That's all the information you're asking for. Let's have a...
No, I still got 22 seconds.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Also, If the inmate welfare fund is taking care of inmates, what do the inmates get? Do they get free calls? Do they get extra chow? You know, is it? Do they get candy or popcorn and stuff like that?
Okay, we have a motion for approval
of the item.
Move second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you. We're now on item number 6, public comment period. We have 15 comment cards. We'll start with the first 5.
Time is closed. I have the, according to the rule, I have the option when, it's not that. It says the public comment will be limited to 2 minutes per individual for each item addressed, unless there are more than 10 comment cards for each item, in which case the public comment will be limited to 1 minute per individual. But I'm not finished. The aforementioned limit may be waived by the president of the board. I'm going to waive that limit today. Next.
The first 5 speakers, Michael Carlin, Jerry Dietrich, Karen Hilfman, Prentice Jenkins, and Melissa Bavin.
Michael Carlin, just a citizen. This commission only exists
because of Russell Poole, who was the first whistleblower. Russell Poole is an American hero, and he was a dear friend. Last Wednesday, Russell was visiting the Sheriff's Department with information to solve the Tupac Shakur and Christopher Wallace cases. At the conclusion of that meeting, he grabbed his chest and he passed away. For 19 years, he served as a member of this institution, an institution he believed in. He knew that most of the members of the LAPD are hardworking, honest people who want the truth to prevail. When the Rampart scandal leadership tried to sweep corruption under the carpet, Russell tendered his resignation. That decision caused a great hardship on Russell and his family, but he always believed that he did the right thing. Russell died working on a case. He was doing what he loved. He gave his life to honor the homicide investigator's creed that all resources would be brought to bear in solving the death of any human being when their lives are taken by another human. I would ask LAPD to please honor the contribution of Russell Poole posthumously. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Dietrich, and I'm with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. We've been coming to these hearings for a long time now, and we're regarding three main issues. One is the drones, how we don't want them. Two is the body camera sham hearings. You know, when I first heard you guys were having hearings about body cameras, I was so excited, and I thought everybody was going to listen to us, but I was wrong. You told us. Soboroff told us that, no, cameras are coming. We just want to talk to you about policies. And the third issue is the sabotaging of the cameras on the cars. And the consent decree that we've had forever was only released because LAPD promised these cameras on these cars. And, of course, they were sabotaged. So what I'm asking you people to do today is do your jobs. And your jobs are the commission concerns are reflective of the community at large. I represent thousands of people who aren't here. A lot of people can't come here and talk to you like this, and they, a lot of them feel the same way I do. It seems we're only a few, but we represent many. There's only a few of us here, but we represent thousands of people. I realize there are people in L.A. who think LAPD does a fine job, but they are the minority. I represent the majority of Angelenos. Number one is L.A. is number one in police killings. I'm so ashamed of that. You guys should be really ashamed of that because you can do something about it. Please do.
Good morning. I'm Karen Hilfman. I wanted to begin by saying how heartened I was by seeing the report in last Friday's LA Times about the police training on de-escalation. And want to commend the police department and the commission for ensuring that that is going on. And in light of the training, I wanted to make some suggestions or just offer some resources for continuing or further training. And one is that everybody on the police force and the commission, if they haven't already, be asked to read The New Jim Crow. It talks about how racism is so endemic in the criminal justice system in the United States, and, of course, policing being a part of that. It was really profound for me to read that. The other resource I wanted to suggest is tapping into the Institute for Nonviolence in Los Angeles. I had attended a day of dialogue meeting a couple of weeks ago on the future of policing. And there were police officers there who participated, and it certainly seemed that it was a very meaningful experience for them to be engaging in, mediated and safe dialogue with members of the community. And would just want to recommend that the police department and the commission push for every police officer to be able to speak with the community in that regard. And want to ask... Okay, I'll stop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melissa Balin, followed by Prentice Jenkins.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Melissa Balin. I'm a member of the media, also a survivor of police brutality from filming the Occupy, and suffered a miscarriage, which you have yet to investigate. But today I'm speaking on behalf of We the People. I have the great honor of presenting the L.A. Police Commission with a writ of quo warranto, which we know means you're fired. It's also my great pleasure today, on behalf of We the People, to present Mr. Bustamante, Mr. Soboroff, and Chief Beck, although he's unsurprisingly not here, with a citizen's arrest. You are under citizen's arrest. This is not a joke, though you'll likely take it as jest. Your crimes are felonious and sure do pass the test under the strictest of scrutinies. You bet. For RICO violations and corruptions most would detest. But you may remain on your own recognizance lest an indictment arrives at the marshal's behest. You'll likely dismiss this whole thing as just me being a pest, some sovereign nutbag in need of a straitjacket vest. But this stuff is legally binding out here in the West, so I continue with zeal on my Don Quixote-like quest, because it's not windmills we're talking, but your grandparents' eggs nest, and as far as we can tell, it's you that's the unwanted guest. Perhaps you didn't realize We the People is with whom you have messed. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, as you've told us with zest, but what you've gone and done is a wanton grave breach at best. If you thought you got away with crimes under color of law you had dressed, please remember today, August 25th, 2015, as the day We the People placed you under arrest. Thank you. You're also fired. You have 30 days to respond, and I would like justice for my unborn child. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Thank you for your service. You're done, son.
Prentice Jenkins, activist since 1991, publisher of City Life newsletter. I'd like to acknowledge Black Lives Matter. I'd like to also acknowledge Stop LAPD Spying and the Civil Liberties Union. We were told that the public is not going to get to see the videotape, the cameras. Only the cops get to see the cameras. That's like the cops catching a pedophile, putting the pedophile, interrogating the pedophile, finding out the pedophile has a laptop with children on it. They ask the pedophile, okay, can we see your laptop? What do you think the pedophile is going to say? No, you can't see it. Kid me? That don't incriminate me. That's exactly what happens with these cameras. I just showed you how it's supposed to go when you use a camera. Those cops were indicted. Their own video camera indicted them. That's why that man said, "No, hell no, we're not going to show the public the camera." You kidding me? You know what some cops do? This right here is a crude diagram of a guy who went to public school. This is 90% of the cops, and in that middle is 10% of the cops. 90% of your cops are good, but in that 10%, they're psychos. They're called psychotics. They suffer from mental illness. They jump out of the car, jump on men, slam them to the ground, slam them up on the wall, grab a few times, laugh. That man fights back like that man I showed you in the video, and then they shoot him in the back and kill him. 10% of your cops are crazy. Absolutely psycho, batshit crazy. Absolutely, they are. And they're still on the force. So what does that mean? More people are going to die. And more of those cops are going to get off. Because y'all not investigating those two cops that killed these L4.
The next five speakers, Luke Weigren, Nia Amina Minor, Jamie Garcia, Omar Pai, and Michael Williams.
Time for cards is closed. Time for cards is closed.
Hello, my name is Luke. Last week I was here for Riddell Jones and all the people, predominantly Black and Latino, under assault by the LAPD. This week I'm here for the same. It's been 2 weeks since Riddell Jones was shot dead in an alley in the Baldwin neighborhood. And the worst case scenario is in those 2 weeks, it's been enough time for the cops involved to corroborate their stories, intimidate witnesses, and tamper with video evidence. In the best case scenario, the department has created a toxic silence which leaves the public no other option than to assume the worst.
But they never came before. They didn't know. All that came
before. While I want this investigation, as well as all investigations into police killings, to be performed speedily and with transparency, I'm not of such high hopes that we can trust a police department to run an investigation on their own department. Let's remind ourselves that they didn't perform the simple protocol of investigating when they killed Riddell Jones over $80. It was $80. Come on. We cannot trust killer cops to stop killing, and the police commission needs to stand as the buffer between the cops and the public so that they can make... make change. I don't even know if the change can come from this level. I think that there needs to be independent or federal oversight, because all these cop killings, especially if LA is the number one killing agency in the country, they need to be investigated not from the LAPD, and this is crazy.
That's the crazy motherfucker.
Mina Minor.
Hi, my name is Nia Amina. I'm also here to demand justice for Riddell Jones. The community needs the status report on the killing of Ezell Ford and Riddell Jones. Have the officers been disciplined? No information has been given to the public. It's been 2 weeks since the death of Riddell Jones and over a year since the death and murder of Ezell Ford. The officers' names. Who was responsible? They are dangerous to our community. I live in that community. You may not. You may not think they're dangerous. They might not be dangerous to your group, but they are dangerous to my community. We need to know. They should be fired, and we cannot wait your 6 to 12 months of investigation, because people will be murdered in that time. Fire Chief Beck. Let me just put it plain. This police chief has consistently and constantly shown a blatant disregard for the lives of our community, and especially black people. You have the ability to remove him, and I demand that you do. When people are gunned down and murdered, and when your police become the judge, jury, and executioner, people are going to be passionately outraged. What you don't do is leave the room when they make public comments, as you did last week. We attempted to voice our concerns. You left and then surrounded us with 30, probably more, police officers armed. And what were they doing? Standing with their hands rested on their guns. Let me tell you, you know that we've been searched and screened. You know what process we've been to get into this room to make our comments. We had to sit through a lot of deception, a lot of games to make our passionate comments. Your response, a demonstration of the very thing that I'm talking about. Over-policing strategies that need to be changed or completely eradicated.
Hi, my name is Jamie Garcia. I'm with Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. I just want to make one example out of this officer when we talk about training and we talk about de-escalation tactics. And what exactly he did was he stepped into conflict. And I've seen him rip microphones off of people. So, and I've cautioned him before that that type of behavior is going to lead to him killing somebody. And so these things, I just don't really believe that these officers are being trained to de-escalate, which leads me to my point that training, more training and more money spent on training doesn't really change behavior, and he's an exact example of that. But I really wanted to talk about the human impact of LAPD policies in our community. So when we talk about the sabotaging of the digital in-car video systems, one of the things I want to say is what happened to all those people where these cameras were sabotaged? What about their lives? Does that, those lives not matter as to what possibly happened? And this commission did not want to investigate. And, you know, Mr. Bustamante said, I can only do what the commission tells me to do, and he's bogged down with work and, you know, all these excuses, which, you know, I kind of believe that he probably is bogged down with work, but doesn't that say that this commission should do something about that? So obviously the impact of that sabotage sabotaging really puts little faith that if the body cameras are sabotaged, that any type of investigation will occur. So that's something else we need to think about. And then when we think about suspicious activity reporting, all these new counterterrorism policies and how they're going to affect the community, we have to start to investigate what kind of impact they're having and what community they're having an impact on, because we're already seeing a trend in racial profiling, and there's tons of federal funding and there's tons of local funding that are going into these policies. We already see what the consequences of the war on drugs were. How much more data are we going to need to collect on these new policies to find out that they're impacting communities, possibly incarcerating people who don't deserve to be, that should not be incarcerated? And again, just to reiterate, body cameras are a waste of resources. We don't need to give police officers more money to make them honest. I mean, it was very clear to my mother, who doesn't even study this stuff, that why should we actually use these things to make officers honest? Now, I hear you, Soboroff, but I had one last statement to make, and you don't have to be so disruptive yourself.
We're taking time out of his... Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Omar, and I'm from the Stop LAPD Spying. I came here to really show much respect to everybody that has the audacity to sit down and be in a very sad and doomy mold at this point, because most of you guys have not really done your job well to really justify that a killing of a youth in, you know, in South Central LA needs to be investigated and needs to be done in a way that is justifiable. Because for one thing, I'm here to represent my community. I'm here to represent the people that are highly concerned of what's happening in this city called Los Angeles. So apparently, we got like the worstest police brutality in the nation, and you guys haven't really did anything about that. So what can we say? Are we just going to just pat you in the back? I don't think so. So best thing to do is to tape more incidents. You know, wherever there's a brutality occurred around the corner of some place here in the city, cameras from cell phones, Blackberries. I still use my Blackberry. It works well. And yes, we do most of the taping, but apparently, body cameras don't necessarily do a thing to solve problems, and so you ought to give us much respect. You ought to give us much gratitude that we basically are fighting for justice, and apparently you guys are not doing a thing for us. So I wish you guys good luck and get a new job. Thank you.
Can you, like, stop the time until I start talking, please? I just want to just make this publicly known that the disrespect from this commission is very offensive to me. It's breaking of the Brown Act. That's what I just want to make that clear. We have, as Black Lives Matter, we have demands. And one of the demands is that we get a progress report on Ezell Ford and Redell Jones' case. We need information. We need transparency with the, again, because we can't trust the police to investigate themselves and do an honest investigation. We've seen corruption with police just recently with Paul Tanaka and Lee Baca. They have been found in corruption. So we can't trust you guys. So we need transparency and information. Also, we would like you guys to adhere to the Brown Act, which states that you guys are supposed to be listening respectfully, supposed to allow everyone to have an opportunity to speak. That's what you pulled Soboroff, Steve, saying that you were going to dismiss the people in line because someone else was taking a long time. That's against the law. It's against the Brown Act, and you can't do that. Secondly, we want Chief Beck fired. Like he has made it very clear that he is not willing to discipline any of these officers who are found to have broken protocol, broken their own rules, and ended up killing an unarmed, innocent young man. How can you have someone who's chief of police who's not willing to discipline his own people? Again, that's why we can't trust you guys to police your own selves, because you guys are full of corruption. You guys are full of people that are going to just watch each other's backs and not just stand up and do the right thing. So that's our demands. That's what we want. We want you guys to adhere to these. We want you guys to listen and really take what the community is trying to tell you seriously. Even though I know, and please get rid of him. Please. He needs to go, because you guys look like you guys actually care. He doesn't give a crap about black people. He doesn't give a crap about what this community is going through. He does not care.
The final six speakers, General Jeff, Hamid Khan, Melvin Farmer, Ted Hayes, Jasmine Richards, and Jacqueline Richardson.
Go ahead.
Takiya 2X, Nation of Islam. I would like to bring up 3 points.
I'm gonna let you speak, and I'll let you start over with your full 2 minutes, because I know it's your first time here, and I know that you didn't understand the rule about getting the card in on time.
Oh, I did. They told me it was too late, but I don't agree. So,
okay, well, I'm going to let you. I'll let you speak this time.
2 minutes.
He's
got to
speak.
Mr. Steve.
Okay, so you can go ahead and start.
Humility. Google it. Second point, the body cam, the whole idea to eradicate its use in the public and to try and make it a private thing and to practice discretion, the body cams were put into place so that the transparency between the police and the citizens was effective. Now, to be able to say that, you know, it's not going to be able to be viewed by the public basically eradicates its usefulness. We put it there not so that the police can see what they were doing, but so that the people can see how the police were not doing their jobs. And secondly, how can you expect somebody who you trained, a police officer that you trained for 6 months, to know the law when it takes a lawyer 8 years? That doesn't make any sense to me. So you expect them to walk around and police the citizens when they don't have the whole law down to the book, and wondering why everybody is upset? And first of all, to the police officer who told me it was too late, I'm sorry, sir. It must have been that X that you saw by my name. But understand this, I multiply by God, and I will be heard regardless. All of us will be heard. Thank you. I got up just like everybody else did. So thank you for listening. And again, Mr. Sabanoff, humility. Practice it.
Next.
Melvin Farmer. I'm addressed the police violence, and everything I say here is true stories, so I don't have to rehearse it. This is not just started. When I was 15, walking in the alley on 81st and Hoover, two law enforcement white cops pulled me at the age of 15, grown men, put my hands on top of the car where it was hot, searched me, let me go, but they said, when you leave, you got to run. I knew without a doubt if I'd have ran, they'd have shot me in the back. So what I did, I dropped on my knees, put my hands over my head, and told them, if you kill me, they're going to know. So this problem's been in existence. Now, that's at 15, but the lesson I learned from that to this day, and it permeates all across the United States, because all these police killings, all of them got one common denominator. They resisted arrest. Or they ran. Because once you resist or run, that opens up another avenue for probable cause to use excessive force until it comes to the most deadliest matter. So what I learned for that is never run, never resist. That way you don't get shot. To put yourself in a position up under color of authority where they can use a gun with impunity once you start running. So that's a public service announcement. Now, let's go to the murder of an unarmed person. Let's go with Margaret Mitchell, the homeless lady that was killed over a screwdriver. First, we're going to use the LAPD model as to how to subdue a suspect without a weapon. Let's start with mental ill. This is what I witnessed over my years. I've seen numerous mentally ill patients with knives, guns, whatever. Were they subduing? They subduing. That's in the L.A. County Jail. There are no guns there.
Sir, I've got to stop you because I have to stop everybody at 2 minutes, but come back next week. We're interested.
Well, I'm trying to bring a solution so I really can get right to the point.
Yeah.
Because
I'm happy to check.
Now, I've been kind of fair, too. But when you get information where the public is trying to help you, because whatever y'all been doing ain't worked in over 50
years.
See what,
I'm happy to chat with you.
That's the problem. And see, I'm serious. We're dealing in murder.
I'm happy to chat with you after the meeting.
Okay, I'm not even chatting to you. I can chat to them. Because we got a new sheriff in town.
Next.
All this.
The next speaker, Mr. Hayes.
Start the time for the next speaker.
It's time for action. It's time for action. My life been on the line since I was 13.
Mr. Hayes?
Mr. Hayes, you want your time to...
Mr. Hayes, he's going to listen because he know what I've been doing just like you know what I've been doing. All of us don't get it.
Okay, next speaker, Hamid Khan.
Now, there's a movement going on.
Start the clock on this one, too.
I got a problem with us saying police kill blacks. We don't say nothing. And I got a problem when we don't say nothing about blacks killing blacks. Where is the Jesse Jacksons? Where are the Earl of Foy Hutchinsons? Where are our black leaders?
We talk about
who
it.
Who represents us?
Yeah. For us?
Nobody.
We talk about it, but we're doing it in a different form.
No, we have to come together as a whole. We have to come together as a whole.
Sir, you guys can go outside and have your chat, but we'd like to hear the rest of the speakers.
As a whole.
Shut up.
The next speaker, Mr. Ted Hayes.
Mr. Hayes, are you waiving your time, Mr. Hayes?
That's what we're going to do.
Thank you.
There's a popular advertisement on TV. A shopper confronts a clerk and says, "Look me in the eye and tell me you have the lowest prices in town." She takes off her glasses in order to say that. Last week it was saying, "Look me in the eye." I don't know whether they got that from their TV commercial or not. But one thing is when the top cop sits in the swivel chair on your dais and turns his back to the audience, that shows he is melting down. If you're in the kitchen, you've got to tolerate the heat. You can't allow people to do the vernacular of pulling your chain, clowning you, or things like that. When you cleared the room, the officers came inside and they were exemplary in dealing with the mayhem and chaos and madness here. You should take a clue from your ground troops. They dealt with these people. They dealt with the denigrating remarks, insulting remarks, the accusations. They stood there stolidly and they dealt with it. I think this board can take a clue from them. Now, I don't know whether you take good advice, which your city attorney might be providing, but indeed you cannot do some of the things you've been doing as far as taking public comment. It's just not legal. I'm so pleased to hear someone mention a Brown Act, the laws protect public comment. You understand that only government can do censorship. No one else can. And to look the people in the eye, to tolerate whatever they're doing, it's a worthwhile thing to do. And I think you can learn to do that. Like I say, there are many things you can't do in-house. Perhaps you need some outside consultation to teach you how to accommodate a hostile audience.
Thank you, sir. Next.
Hi, Hamid Khan with the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. Don't you all see what's going on? The whole narrative and the BS narrative of the new LAPD is just coming apart from its seams. I mean, as much as, and you know, it's not even you, because what is happening is that in the court of public opinion, LAPD is being trashed. LAPD is being exposed. The whole propaganda of the new LAPD, the whole propaganda of community policing is coming apart from its seams. It's literally coming apart from its seams. As much as the media will try to sensationalize our, you know, folks from the community, that they're loud, they're disruptive, But what they're showing is they're exposing you. They're exposing your complete failure. They're exposing your complete incompetence. They're exposing your complete denial. They're exposing your complete dismissiveness. They're exposing your complete blindness to what's going on. We have talked to you about how structurally LAPD is becoming more violent, how excessively it's getting militarized, how strategies and tactics now, counterterrorism and counterinsurgency tactics, have been incorporated into everyday policing. Suspicious activity reporting that started as counterterrorism is everyday policing. Predictive policing that was built in Afghanistan is now everyday policing. Automatic license plate readers, dirt boxes, digital receiver technology, that all comes from the battlefront, and we are considered insurgents. And people are not going to take it anymore, because if we are going to be looked as insurgents, then people are warning you as well, because people are coming at you. But for some reason, it is really interesting. I mean, you, absolutely sober off, I mean, I can say people have zero trust, zero. This is what it is. You are pathetic. You have failed. But at least people are putting some trust in a couple of law professors and an ED from a nonprofit. But yet at the same time, there is something in this Kool-Aid in this building that people just can't function properly. And people become completely dismissive. So it's not sensationalist. It's a reality. It's not absurd. It is happening. It is not just something, some drama. It is real action that is happening on the street.
Next.
I just want to address that brother that said that, well, he gave you guys consent to kill us. There's something called non-lethal. Non-lethal. People could get shot in the foot, the toe, or something. You know what I mean? I just want to express my disgust in Chief Beck. This is another week that he has not come. So we see that he bluntly is disregarding black lives and that he bluntly doesn't care. And for you guys to be here and know that, you guys are the only ones who can fire him. And so he's expressing to the world that he doesn't care. So I'm demanding that you guys do something. Our first demand is that we want to know the status report on the killings of Ezell Ford and Redell Jones. We still don't know the officers who killed Mr. Ford, we still don't know if the officers who have killed Mr. Ford have been disciplined. No information has been given to the public by LAPD about Redell Jones. Even her name came through investigative journalism. We need the officers' names who were responsible for killing Redell Jones. We see them as dangerous to the community, and the community should be warned. We also, Steve, pay the fuck attention to me, and I'm not playing. Look at me. Look at me in my eyes, Steve, because I'm not moving until you look at me. I'm not going to continue talking to you, because I'm talking to you. I'm not playing these games with you. I'm not playing these games. We also demand that they be fired, and we want people to know that we want the decisions to be made with full engagement of the community rather than behind the closed doors like you guys been doing. Los Angeles Police Commission adherence to the Brown Act. We want the commission to understand themselves as representatives of us and respect that and respect the public engagement. This means listening respectfully, Steve. That's the number one thing, okay? Respect. Because if you want respect, you got to give respect. Or I'm going to keep being disrespectful to your punk ass. To the public comments, we want Chief Beck fired. This police chief has consistently and constantly shown a blatant disregard for the lives of our community. And especially...
Of course, sir, we have Jacqueline Richardson.
Cannot afford to wait the 6 to 12 months that the official investigations take. They are dangerous to our community. Yeah. Black people, please know that the police commission has the ability to remove Chief Beck, and we demand them to. If you don't, we're going to keep coming up here every week and disrupting your shit, because I'm tired of it, Steve. I'm tired. I'm sick and tired of playing games. I'm sick and tired of this. I'm going to disrupt this every week. Aren't you tired of seeing my face? Aren't you tired of this shit? Do something. Did you go to the doctor yet? Because I'm telling you, the French Revolution is about to, the Haitian Revolution is about to happen again, okay? The French Rebellion is going to happen. We're going to be the only Negroes that's going to up
the next speaker
and take over this shit if you don't start paying attention. Give me my mic back. I don't care.
That's it.
I don't care.
No. Jacqueline Richardson.
Then I'm just going to talk.
She's got one more week.
How do you stop men from impregnating women who they are not married to, who have no intention of marrying them? How do you stop that? One solution is make them pay the hospital bill. Another part of the solution is make them pay for that child until that child is 18 years of age. Downtown Los Angeles this past weekend, there were a little group of white young men, and these other groups, this other group of white men were passing by them. They were young men. And they said, don't you impregnate any women. And they weren't offended. They said, okay. The major part of this is you don't see the women with the big bellies, the great big bellies walking around. You don't see it. It's a hidden problem. This past weekend also, there was this very, it concerns all races. Every race you can think of is involved in this. I'm sorry, but it's hidden, but it's real. This beautiful young white woman was on the street and never touched. And most of the women that are getting impregnated, a lot of them have never been touched. This man was kissing on her, and it looked like he was trying to impregnate her. That should be stopped. They shouldn't be allowed to fondle a woman's body, to be kissing on young women like that. Another problem is some men have three wives. This is also a hidden problem. Some go from house to house with these women, and some of them live in the same house. This three wives business is a fertile ground for murder. It's a very fertile ground for having people murdered.
General Jeff.
Thank you. Before I speak, could you instruct your officer not to stand so close behind me when I speak?
Is this the last speaker?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Can you speak?
You can start the time.
Can you please have your officer not stand so close behind me? Thank you. Good morning, Commission. My name is General Jeff. I'm a Skid Row community activist. Speaking on behalf of a lot of concerned citizens, we just want to say that there are those of us who know that they may be scared that officers have their hands on their weapons, and we live in fear behind that. But there are also those of us who know that the real reason why the officers have their hands on their weapons is because they're scared. And, you know, there's two different ways to look at that. And, you know, those of us that know that they're living in fear, there's nothing that the department or any extensive training they can do that can actually remove that fear out of the officers. And so, you know, that's why we're going to continue to have officer-involved shootings and officer-involved murders, because you got a lot of scared officers out there in the department. And contrary to what the Los Angeles Police Protective League is saying, the body cam footage system has actually been totally manipulated by the department and the PPL. And so us concerned citizens who, while we wanted to support the body cam footage, the system, for our defense, the system has officially been manipulated. So there you have it. There's no dispute in terms of who they said they reached out to. They didn't reach out to anyone that I know, and I consider myself to be well connected to a lot of people out in the city of Los Angeles. In Skid Row specifically, Carlos Ocaño last year was shot down off of a billboard in Skid Row on 5th and San Pedro on the southeast corner by a SWAT, LAPD SWAT officer, and we still have yet to hear any type of a report on the status of that case. We're still traumatized in Skid Row, and we need to know what's going on, just like the same with the status of Redell Jones. 2 minutes is not enough time. Thank you.
Okay, this concludes item number 6. We're now on item number 7, closed session. The Board of Police Commissioners will now recess into closed session to discuss item numbers 10A1 and 2 in accordance with Government Code 54957.
Open session. What the fuck do you have to talk about behind closed doors, please?